The first of three public master planning outreach meetings was held yesterday. In the studio with a recap, I have Park City School District Superintendent Emma Conley, along with Business Administrator Todd Hopper. Good morning to both of you.
Morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
So a pretty good turnout. Hoping, I guess, the same for the next two as well.
That'd be great.
Yeah, 50 people. And are they new faces, or are the people you've been hearing from?
Some new, some that we've seen before.
Yeah. So how did the meeting work? I mean, how was it staged?
Great question. So we had the PowerPoint ready for them and some handouts as far as the growth information, as far as the permits from the county and the city, and then went through the information as far as the history of the master planning, where we are with growth, enrollment, capacity, and then also looking at our, of course, our educational needs, looking at all-day kindergarten, restructuring of the reading program, K-3, dual language, and then also the expansion of the high school, specifically to be able to prepare our students for their colleges and career.
All right. So basically just setting out the givens and what you're working with.
Correct.
And then just what, opened it up to questions and comments?
Right. So after we went through Scheme 3, which, as you know, you were part of that master planning workshop that we had with three of those, went through what we've worked up to point and then started gathering input.
Okay. So, well, let's talk. It seems like the biggest concern is the move of Dozier Field. Can the A High School addition work without moving Dozier?
There's several options that are looked at. Right now, the community input to this point was showing that to the west of the high school would be that expansion area. But that's not the only option that's there. So we're working with VCBO, the planner on the project, to see if there are other ways to expand the high school. What happens is, depending on where you expand the high school, you start a domino effect of other facilities needing to move or make room for the expansion, i.e. Dozier Field needing to move.
All right. So, I mean, some of the other, I mean, we heard from high school principal Bob O'Connor saying he just thought it would be too remote building it on the other side. But don't you have some remote programs like PC CAPS and the CTE program that you, daycare that you could put back there?
We're getting ready both to talk. Absolutely. I think that one of the things that really brings to light is we are focused on helping our students maximize their time at school. And so looking at the facilities and making sure that the programmatic pieces are in place. And while it could be expanded somewhere else, we also need to realize that, and this was brought up and it was a question, and I think as a former high school principal, I'd like to address of, you know, put 10-minute passing periods in between so our students get there on time. And that really is unreasonable in the world of education. And granted, we're dealing with adolescent and young adults, and putting that much time in between really does open up a whole nother can of worms, per se, as far as behavior and interactions that we probably want to limit.
Mm-hmm. You heard from Vern Christensen, a former school board member, talking about maybe extending the two hallways that have second floors there at the high school into the parking lot. But we've heard that you already have parking issues, so you don't want to take away the parking?
I would say across the board that looking at that entire Kearns campus, McPullen is a major issue for parking. Looking at the high school, having a teenager that drives there and knowing the struggles that all of our students have trying to find the correct place to park. I would also say in working with the city and the county, being very proactive in doing some transportation studies and thinking out of the box and what can we do to be innovative here in Park City for this, because this is a community issue, not just a school issue.
So in terms of the Dozier Field, there you had heard from some discussion about maybe just moving all of the fields out to Quinns Junction as well as that new indoor facility, and that actually maybe alleviate a lot of the traffic. Is that a possibility, or that was something that we've heard before, though, that people want the high school activities in the city limits?
We have both schools of thought there. I mean, mm-hmm. we have several that have come to us and said, please don't move the high school, because we did look at that initially of, you know, maybe we need to look at some other places and other pieces of property. And it came back, no, this really makes our community unique. And I'd like to say, too, that even some of the attendees last night, although that they were against moving the field, they all came back and said the reason that we're here in Park City is one of the main reasons is because of the excellent school system that we have, and that we believe that it should be here in the city limits.
Yeah. So, I mean, at what point then do you make a decision about where Dozier Field goes or if it stays?
That's what this input process is, is to help us understand the temperament and the ideas and the concerns of the community to then make that final decision. And that will go to the board. The board will make that decision as to what structure will go where and in what time.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about Treasure Mountain. You heard last night that maybe Treasure Mountain isn't ready for demolition. I mean, in your minds, it is?
It's one of those that's on the line. Improvements that need to happen there at the school are costly, and building a new school is costly, and the numbers are coming in close to each other. So it's hard to determine, you know, do we put more money into the school and help it along for another 10, 15 years, or is it time to just call it quits and build a new school that will last 40 to 50 years?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, how far do we take that out in terms of vetting that, you know, that decision?
It will have to happen simultaneous with all of the other decisions. Moving the ninth grade out of the Treasure and into the high school, which is driving the expansion discussion, really sets the future for what Treasure Mountain might be or might not be.
And I think it's important that that the community hears some of the issues around Treasure Mountain, and I know that several already know, but we have issues with the pipes, the ventilation system, as well as the sewer coming up. And also, one thing that Rory brought up numerous times was the
seismic issues.
That it doesn't meet the code for seismic?
Correct. It was built for the code at the time, but under today's standards, it's not where it needs to be and needs to be reinforced.
Yeah. Also heard concerns about not enough time to get impact studies done on traffic, noise, or even to get the real cost of what this is going to be.
Sure. And those studies actually have been ongoing, and we're expecting several of those studies back even this week. So we've been looking at that. That may have been more low-key in working with the planners and getting that work done. But that will all come together and be brought to light as we look at these options.
And I would say early September, as we started looking at each and every facility, we started doing our traffic studies, the noise, the wildlife. I mean, so all of this has been done, and whether it's been publicized very well or communicated very well, we'll take responsibility for that, but we have been proactive in getting that information. And so it's now just a time matter. And again, it was brought up, you know, we're on a 50-day timeline right now as far as this summer and continuing these workshops and these input sessions, and then having our board come back in August to be able to have some type of recommendation from the Master Planning Committee.
Mm-hmm. Because they have to make a decision whether or not to put a bond on the election, right?
Correct. So we have a couple meetings coming up in August. We have an August 11th meeting, which will have a report to the board. And when we say we, meaning the Master Planning Committee. And then the August 18th meeting will be the drop-dead date, whether or not that they recommend and approve a bond to be put on. Because August 20th is then that date that we would need to submit.
Yeah. Also been talking about two phases. So the first phase and a second phase. First phase, $45 to $55 million. The second phase, maybe another $40 to $50 million as well. Have you put any numbers to that?
So we had cost estimators come in and look at the different projects that are on the plan and start to guess what those costs are. Looking at the first phase, we've also brought in our financial advisor to start running numbers should there be a scenario of a bond. And again, the 50-day timeline is to keep all options on the table. It's not a mad dash to get to a bond election on November 3rd. It's if we need to go that route, we have to have certain decisions made to exercise that. If we don't want to go there, then the 50-day timeline isn't as critical, and that option just comes off the table. So that rush is to keep all the options on the table. Nonetheless, looking at that, we've run some numbers on what bond costs might be on an average home. And at last night, we talked about a $35 million bond, if that were the price range that we are looking at. That impact on a primary home valued at about $550,000 would be around $67. A year for a 20-year bond. And so we're feeling that out, trying to see what that impact is and where the costs come down.
Yeah. So when you talk about 35, but that doesn't sound like it'll cover the first, or you just pull money out of the
savings?
Well,
we have money in our capital account as well. And so the anticipation is that we would use both resources available today as well as looking to financing.
And we know that we are very responsible for using our taxpayers' money responsibly. And looking at the needs of our students, and I think it's also important to clarify this, is that our buildings are at capacity. So we have two buildings that are past capacity, meaning they've reached that 100%. And most of our buildings are between the 87 and 95% capacity, meaning we theoretically could close enrollment for many of those. As you know, Trailside is closed for open enrollment. The high school could have been closed, but it was a board decision for that. And so we're very mindful of our enrollment. The question came up last night as well as, well, how many students are out of district? And out of a population of 4,700, we have about 140 that come in from other districts. And it's not just South Summit, North Summit, Wasatch. We're talking Granite, Salt Lake. And it also is a benefit as we have teachers that commute up to Park City to teach in our schools. We allow them as a benefit to be employed to bring their students into our school system.
Yeah. You had somebody bring up last night who lives in Highland Estates saying she could barely pay her taxes and concerned that we're allowing out-of-district students in, such as Promontory students. Can you explain, though, that why we shouldn't have to worry about that?
Well, it's just the magnitude. 140 students, that's from all areas coming into our district, and they're sprinkled throughout the schools. So it's not like Trailside is the only school that has all 140 kids, and so that means that we're hiring four or five teachers just to educate. They're spread out through the classes, and you wouldn't be able to isolate and say, oh, this class is all the out-of-district kids, so therefore if you got rid of that would disappear. We would still have class sizes as in the range where they are because the number is so low. It might be a concern for the future if we build too much capacity in our buildings and then there's that much more invitation to come in and be part of the district. I could see that as a future concern. But right now, the numbers are small enough that you wouldn't really notice if they were in or out.
And this was one of the very first things that we looked at in working with our master planning steering committee, because originally it was our elementaries are at capacity, let's build a new elementary school. And as we looked at, well, that would truly open up a large amount of space for open enrollment, it became very evident that we needed to build in the middle, meaning our 5-6 school expansion of our 9th grade. So this has not been a conversation that we've ignored. In fact, we've gone through it for months in detail of anywhere from open enrollment statutes to how the formula is used, then also looking at our individual elementary schools and options that we have. I mean, I was adamantly opposed to grade realignment, and as we continued to look at all the pros and the cons, it became very clear that we needed to do that. It was the right thing for kids.
So do we have to have a bond election in November to move forward with a plan? Portion of the master plan?
I'm going to say yes, just because we have two significant areas. That is the 9th grade expansion and a 5-6 school. And we have, and I'm gonna speak for our business administrator. So we have enough in our capital funds to cover one or the other, but not both. And we have to have both just because of our growth and our enrollment.
So it doesn't sound like whether or not we have a bond election. What we're trying to figure out is how much the bond election will be for November 3rd.
Right, and keep in mind that I'm the superintendent, and it's all up to the board. So I give my recommendation as a superintendent from all the input that we have as a team, and then it truly is up to our governing board. We had three governing board members there last night. They're really interested in the input of our community.
So what would happen, though, if this we have a bond election, say, for $35 million, and it doesn't pass? What do we do?
We are planning for that. I mean, we have to look at options A, B, C, and D. Given the direction that we're going with all day K, and you're going to see some portables already at Trailside this year. Could possibly be portables at the high school already. It's just a reality. We have to use our resources correctly.
All right. So either build it or you bring it, and pay for it that way.
The students are coming.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, real quick, wanted to ask you about something that was brought up last night, suggesting that the city partner with the school district to provide a real bus route for kids who are closer than a mile, so parents wouldn't have to drive them to school. Is that something that can be worked out?
It's interesting to figure out how to work that out, because there are some federal regulations on how a city transit bus that can be used for pupil transportation. So if we were to get into a no-cost arrangement, that wouldn't work, because the federal dollars can't be used for a dedicated bus, a city transit bus, for education purposes. And so it would come down to what arrangements could be pulled together, how would it be financed, and make that attractive for someone to come and bring their students to school on public transportation.
And we've had conversations again with city and county council as far as what are some options where we could partner, you know, having more park and rides and having more shuttles and incentives for especially our high school students to use those type of shuttles and looking at that and very interested in exploring options.
Okay, two more opportunities for the public to learn more. And of course, you're going to be having public hearings before, I guess, anything's decided. But give us those dates again.
Yep, July 6th, 5:30, Ecker Hill. July 21st, Park City High School Lecture Hall, 6 p.m.
Okay, Ember, Todd, anything else?
Nope.
All right, hey, thanks for your time.
Thanks.
Thank you.
The Summit County Council meeting tomorrow at the Summit County Courthouse in Colville, starting at 4:40 in the studio to review some of those agenda items. I have Lisa Yoder. She's the county's sustainability manager. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning, Leslie.
So first up on the agenda, we've got a possible adoption of a resolution granting authority to the county treasurer to waive interest and penalties on past due taxes under special circumstances. Can you talk a little bit about what those circumstances would be? I mean, why are we doing this?
Briefly, a resolution was passed in 2010 that allows the treasurer to make decisions to waive those in certain circumstances. And my understanding of this, and I'm not the expert, is that if approved, the treasurer would be allowed to follow an order grant relief for like primary residence in incidences such as damage to property or perhaps expenses related to death or illness that substantially reduced the household. It would be kind of an administrative thing with some guidelines established by the council.
Okay. Let's see. We've got also a work session starting at 5:20. There's a short discussion, a petition by Zions Bank for a minor adjustment to the county border. Can you talk about that at all?
My understanding of that is the border is established by the ridgeline in the mountains between Morgan and Summit. And there's an area where there's a saddle, which makes an unclear boundary. There's no ridgeline for the boundary. So in that area, a house was built that happened to be across the land, the boundary, the imaginary boundary through that point. So this is a resolution between both Summit County and Morgan County to agree to put the house in Summit County.
Okay. And then at after 5:40, really all of the agenda items deal with community development and the renewal agency, basically to enable the Be Wise Energize program?
Correct.
Yeah, which you're basically heading up here.
Yes, I am.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about that here. This area development, I mean, basically everybody in the county could be part of this, but you had to get approvals from those in the municipalities?
Correct. As it stands right now, four municipalities have opted in. Otherwise, the county can only administer the program in its jurisdiction, which is the unincorporated areas. So in order for everyone to be able to utilize this low-income loan fund program, we have to have each of the cities adopt in by resolution.
All right. So you have resolutions, I think, from Park City and Camas?
From four. Park City, Camas, Colville, and
so what about Oakley and Hennifer? They still need to vote on
Oakley and Hennifer, I'll be meeting with them in July.
So at this point, any city that you know of that doesn't want to join, be
no.
part of this?
No, everybody thinks it's a good idea.
Okay. So basically, this Be Wise Energized program, tell us what it does.
The program allows people, well, it provides assistance and information to find out how to improve the energy efficiency of your home. And it's designed that an energy auditor would come into the home and work with the homeowner to decide what's the most efficient and cost-effective measures to implement. And then the county will provide a fund that if a homeowner wants to make those eligible improvements, they can borrow this money at a low-interest loan rate.
So how is this going to change the county budget then for the year? Because that's one of the things that the county council has to vote on.
Right. It won't change the county budget in that the proceeds from the Qualified Energy Conservation Bond that fund the program go into basically like think of it as a bank. They go in the bank, and then the homeowners who want to use the money take it out of the bank and put it back in the bank, pay it back. So it doesn't affect the overall budget.
All right. So I'm guessing you read the letter to the editor recently from a resident, Joseph Feely, basically saying that he thought that this was moving too fast and there were still too many questions that need to be answered. Have you addressed any of his concerns? Or?
Well, we are addressing concerns, and it is slowed down a little bit. First of all, because we need to wait for these two other municipalities to come on board, we are exploring additional program administrators, which gives us more time to consider the costs, the policies and procedures that we'll put in place. So it is slowed down. We were hoping to launch it September 1st, and it looks like it's going to be more like October 1st, which will give us more time to work out some of the details.
All right. Can we go through some of the questions that he raised in
sure.
his letter? Basically, he's asking who's administering the low-interest loans, the county?
No, we've put out an RFP for a loan administrator, loan servicing administrator. We don't have the capacity to underwrite and issue and service loans.
Okay. Do we know what the interest rate at this point is going to be?
No, we don't. We are hoping to keep it about 3%, but that depends on what proposals come in from the loan administrators and what the program administrator costs come in. So that's part of this, it's not a delay. It's part of the process in getting to be able to launch the program.
Yeah, you have to charge enough to make sure that the costs are covered.
Yes, we have to cover the cost, absolutely.
All right. And is there a maximum loan amount at this point?
The program was designed to be a maximum of $40,000, and a minimum, I believe, was $4,000.
All right. And at this point, do we know who will qualify for the loans?
At this point, and where we've been, the intent is that all primary homeowners of single-family detached homes, so it does not apply to condos, second homes. It's only primary home exemption status, single-family homes. And then anyone of any income level is eligible as long as they can pay back their loan. That's the only requirement.
So they'd have to provide that financial information.
Yes.
Yeah, just like you would if you were going to get a second on your home
exactly.
or something.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a home improvement loan, basically.
Yeah. Mr. Feely wrote that with home loans currently at historically low levels, does this loan provide much of an incentive for homeowners?
Well, that's a good point. We hope to have the interest rate a little bit lower, maybe a point lower. But what the program also does is it simplifies this whole process. Because maybe if you want to insulate, add insulation, or make your home entirely more efficient, there's many different components. There's windows, there's insulations, there's a heating and ventilating efficiencies you can make. So right there are three different contractors. What we can do with this program is first we get a trained, qualified, certified energy auditor into the home to assess the house with the homeowner. From there, they decide what sort of contractors they need. Now, where do you get these contractors? The program will vet a network of contractors who are, again, trained and certified to warranty that your work is done and you get the results you want. Then we're going to follow it up with a confirmation of those energy savings that we can kind of quantify, but the homeowner is assured that they got what they set out to get.
Yeah. So any concern about the home energy auditor? I mean, he had expressed some concern saying, I mean, are we hiring a truly independent energy auditor or somebody who's interested in selling new windows and new furnaces?
No, they would be completely separate. The energy auditor is a technician of the in and of themselves. They will have no relationship to selling product.
Okay. So what do we know about the savings from doing a home energy efficiency project? I mean, is there a way to quantify that?
Yes, the energy audit will help quantify that, but basically we're looking for 20% increased efficiency in a weatherized home, and that's typically costs $4,000 to $14,000. And we can get 20 to 40, even up to 50% if a person does a deep retrofit of their house. And that's extensive. That might be going into wall cavities, replacing an old furnace with a high-efficiency furnace. And that can cost up to $40,000. So it depends on how the structure and how much a person wants to invest in it.
So certainly it could justify the cost, though, the savings.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. The cost savings should help pay... will help pay for whatever loan the homeowner takes out.
All right. So in terms of this, I mean, the council's voting on things, but are there still future decisions to be made?
Yes. Even once all of the resolutions from the cities are in, the council adopts the program by ordinance. Then we have to go back to all the municipalities and have them also adopt by ordinance to go to the next step. We won't issue the bond until we're sure that we've covered all the details and can make this fly. If there's any hesitation, if there's any concerns along the way, we can stop, we can reassess, but we won't issue the bond until we know that this is going to work.
Okay. Let's see. What's the status, the latest on the fireworks and fire restrictions now? At this point, they're banned in Park City, but not in Summit County.
It's my understanding, and I just called to check, knowing this question might come up, that there is not currently a ban from the county. But we certainly urge caution. Just because there's not a ban, it doesn't mean, you know, to be reckless, of course. We want people to be very careful.
Yeah, and even if no restrictions were set for July 4th, I guess the state forester could still come back and ban them before Pioneer Day, huh?
I guess it's my understanding that that can be done. An emergency meeting can be called of the council to make that decision.
All right. And then Mountain Accord, the council is scheduled to decide by next week, July 8th. Since the Accord Executive Committee is deciding on a charter, cutting it pretty close here, huh?
It's my understanding that the council will meet and discuss that and have public input at the July 8th meeting.
Okay. Any idea which way they're leaning?
No, I don't.
Okay. Anything else?
I can't think of anything else, Leslie. Thank you.
Okay. Lisa, thanks.
You're welcome.
Morning News and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is provided by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Assemble Park City, Deer Valley Resort, and Promontory and the Promontory Foundation.